I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everything gets farther apart. Everything gets more and more diffuse. Stars burn out and new stars can't form because you're not bringing material together to form them anymore. And you end up with a universe where the stars are dying, the particles are decaying, even black holes are evaporating, and the universe just gets very, very cold and empty and dark.
Hej och välkomna till det 36:e avsnittet av podden Allt du behöver veta om ny teknik. Jag heter Per Danielsson och den här veckan har poddens medarbetare Anja Obminska intervjuat kosmologen och professorn Katie Mack. Hon forskar bland annat i mörk materia och vakuumförfall. Nu är hon aktuell med en ny bok med titeln The End of Everything. Och precis som titeln antyder handlar boken om universums yttersta öde. Häng med på ett intressant samtal om teorierna om hur universum en dag dör och hur det är att forska om detta och hur hon arbetar för att ens kunna uttala sig om universums slut. Frågorna är som sagt många och svaren är långt ifrån givna.
Hi, Katie Mack.
Hello.
Welcome to our podcast.
Thanks.
Yeah, so we're going to tackle a very big question in a minute. But before that, could you just please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? Because people may not exactly know who you are, although you are famous on Twitter as Astro Katie. But you can just maybe give us a little biography.
So I'm an astrophysicist, which means that I study the universe. Specifically, I do cosmology, which is really the study of the universe as a whole, the properties, the origin of the cosmos, how it will end, which is the topic of my book. And I am a theorist, which means that I approach these things from a theoretical standpoint. So I use equations and computer programming and things like that rather than telescopes and experiments. And I also do a lot of writing and speaking and so on, which is one way people might have seen me before.
So when did you start thinking about the universe? And when did you start to think about the universe ending?
So I've been interested in the universe in general for a very long time. I think I was probably about 10 years old when I started reading Stephen Hawking's books and thinking about the Big Bang and black holes and so on. And so I've always had that interest in the really big questions of the universe. And I think I started getting interested in the end of the universe when I was in college and started to understand sort of the really big, scary things that have happened to the cosmos in the past and the fact that there are a lot of things we don't understand about the universe right now and that, how it will end is a scientific question whose answer we still don't fully know. And that just got me really intrigued about what the possibilities are and how we could figure that out.
We've talked a lot about and read a lot about the beginning of the universe or the birth of universe, but not as much about the ending. So is that why you decided to write a book about it, or what was the reason?
Yeah, that was a big part of it. I thought that, I had read a lot of books about the beginning of the universe. I knew that that was a topic that was covered a lot. But when I would go out and give lectures about my research or about other aspects of cosmology, people got really excited about the end and really curious about it and wanted to know, what do we know about this? How do we know about this? Like, what are the possibilities? What's going to happen to us? And I realized that there was definitely room for a book that brought together a bunch of different possibilities and talked about how we're figuring it out and really brought that to the public in a way that they could access and understand, because there hadn't been much discussion of that in the literature yet, in the, popular press.
So why do you think we should pay attention to the end of the universe?
Well, I think it's really just something that we as humans are curious about. I don't think that discovering how the universe will end will necessarily give us any sort of practical advantage in our lives. It's not going to make our cars run faster. Maybe in the process of studying the end of the universe, we'll discover something interesting about physics that will lead to new technologies. This is something that has happened over and over and over again in the history of science. You go off to study some esoteric, sort of very impractical thing, and you learn something about how the world works, and then you apply that, and suddenly you have cell phones or whatever. That has happened, and that could happen again, just in the process of studying this. But I think that really the reason we study the end of the universe or any aspect of theoretical cosmology is that we're just curious creatures. Like, we want to know the answers to these big questions. We want to know how we fit into the cosmos. What is our purpose here? What kind of perspective should we have? What should we expect for the future and legacy of our species? I think those are just things that we as humans have an innate curiosity about, and we just want to know.
You talk in your book about the five of the most likely ways the universe will end, according to science. So could you please tell us a little bit about each scenario and how probable they seem today? And so we start with the big crunch.
Yeah, so the scenarios I chose are ideas that have been discussed in the scientific literature that people have been writing papers about and that represent kind of the range of things that could happen. So the big crunch is something that was really thought to be the most likely back in sort of the 1960s. It's the idea that the expansion of the universe that's currently happening might turn around and cause everything to re-collapse. So right now we know that distant galaxies are getting farther away from us, farther away from each other. There's more empty space in the universe all the time. The universe is getting bigger. And for a long time, there was a question of, is that going to continue forever? Or is that going to stop and turn around? Are things going to re-collapse? Because we think that, early on, everything was very close together. The universe was very small and dense. It's been expanding over time. Maybe that expansion will keep going forever. Maybe not. What happens if it doesn't? And that's when you get a big crunch. Everything kind of gets closer and closer together. The universe gets hotter and denser. And it all ends in a sort of very dramatic compression and cooking of everything. So it's a fairly unpleasant way to go, but we think that it's probably not going to happen based on our current data, because the universe is not slowing down in its expansion. It's certainly not reversing. It actually seems to be speeding up in its expansion.
Okay, so the next one is the heat death.
Right, so the heat death is what happens if the expansion of the universe just keeps going, as it seems to be doing now. So as we can see now, the expansion of the universe is going faster and faster all the time. It was slowing down for a while. For the first few billion years after the Big Bang, the expansion of the universe was slowing down, but over time it's been accelerating, and now it's speeding up. And we think that that's just going to keep going. We think that there's some aspect of the universe that causes the expansion to speed up. We call that aspect dark energy. And one possibility for dark energy is that it's just a property of the cosmos. It's a property of space that it has this expansion built into it. It's something we call the cosmological constant. And if that really is what's making the universe expand faster, then that leads to just the kind of emptying out of the cosmos. You know, everything gets farther apart. Everything gets more and more diffuse. Stars burn out and new stars can't form because you're not bringing material together to form them anymore. And you end up with a universe where the stars are dying, the particles are decaying, even black holes are evaporating, and the universe just gets very, very cold and empty and dark. And the reason it's called the heat death is that it's really sort of a technical term. Heat in that sense is just means disordered energy. And what's happening is the universe is decaying into just pure disordered energy, just very, very cold, very, very little bit of radiation, sort of the waste heat of the whole process of the cosmos.
So the next one is the vacuum decay.
Right. So I should say that the heat death is the one we think is the most likely based on how we see the universe evolving right now. Vacuum decay, though, is an interesting possibility because we don't really know how likely it is, but we do know that if it could happen, it could happen kind of at any time. In the sense if it happens, it's because of a totally unpredictable quantum transition, in the sense that it would be something where we wouldn't be able to say where or when it would happen. Now, we would be able to say that it's very unlikely to happen any time in the next, you know, trillions and trillions and trillions of years, but in principle, it could happen sooner. So what vacuum decay is it's kind of an instability built into how the universe works. And this instability could be triggered by what's called a quantum tunneling event. So a sort of random fluctuation in an energy field in the universe called the Higgs field. So the Higgs field is this sort of energy field that stretches, you know, fills the whole universe, and it has a particular sort of energy associated with it. And there's a kind of quantum process, subatomic kind of process that could happen at some point in that energy field. And that could make that energy field change. And that would be bad because the Higgs field sort of determines how physics works in our universe. And if it changes, that changes how physics works in our universe. And it would change it to a kind of physics that would mean that our atoms don't hold together anymore, that particles can't interact in the way that they do. And if the Higgs field changed, it would break physics. It would break how the universe works. It would make structure, you know, us impossible. So if that transition happened, then it would cause a bubble of a different kind of space to suddenly expand through the universe at about the speed of light and just destroy everything. And that would be, that's the process of vacuum decay. And it's intriguing because it's something that if it were to happen, it would be totally unpredictable where and when it would occur. And we wouldn't see it coming because it would be this sort of bubble that's traveling at the speed of light. So you wouldn't know, you know, by the time you saw it, it would be on top of you. And it would just destroy everything. Every time I bring this up, I feel I have to mention the caveat that this is not something we should worry about. You know?
That's exactly something I wanted to mention. But now, because I'm looking at you, because we're doing this by video, but only recording the audio. But you kind of are smiling and look quite calm. And it's kind of hard to comprehend that you can look so calm when you talk about something so massive.
Right, yeah. So it's definitely not something to worry about. I find it interesting. I'm smiling because it's intriguing from a physics point of view. But there are a few reasons we shouldn't worry about it. One is that when we do these calculations, the time scale in terms of when we expect this event to occur it's 10 to the power of 100 years or more. So that's 10 with 100 zeros after it. Or one with 100 zeros after it. That's how long in the future we think it'll be before this is likely to happen. Now, you know, there's probabilities, so we can't say for certain, but we're pretty sure it would be very, very far into the future. And also, the idea that this could happen is based on a very incomplete understanding of physics. So it's based on the idea that, you know, there's no, that basically we'll never discover any new physics, any new phenomena in physics. And it's just an extrapolation from what we do know now. And there are reasons to doubt the validity of that assumption. So I think that it's right now we should think of it as a really cool, intriguing idea from a physics standpoint and not at all something to think about on a practical standpoint. There are much more immediate, more certain dangers that we face as a species that we should think about.
We have still two scenarios left. So we have the Big Rip.
Yeah, so the Big Rip is... It's related to the heat death. So the heat death is what happens if the universe has dark energy in the form of a cosmological constant. So something where just space has this stretchiness built in. It makes the universe expand. It expands forever. It cools down. It fades away. But it's possible that whatever is making the universe expand faster, this mysterious dark energy, it's possible that it's not just a property of space. It's possible that it's a new component of the universe, like a new sort of energy field that's causing extra expansion. And if that's the case, then it could be something that could change over time. It could be a different sort of energy field. And there's one... proposition for what that is. It's called phantom dark energy, and it's something where the amount of dark energy in the universe is increasing over time in such a way that the expansion is speeding up and getting more powerful. And what it would do is not only would it sort of make empty space get bigger, move galaxies apart from each other, and, you know, just create more empty space, it would start to pull apart actual things that are already, you know, built. So it would start pulling apart galaxies, you know, pulling stars away from other stars and pulling, you know, galaxies apart, then pulling solar systems apart, you know, taking stars and planets away from each other, and then pulling apart planets and stars themselves. And eventually it would get so powerful, it would just sort of rip the whole universe apart. And that's the Big Rip. And that's an interesting idea because it is so dramatic. And because based on the data in terms of how we understand how the current expansion of the universe is working, we can't completely rule out that the universe is headed that direction. But what we can say is that if it were to happen, it would be at least sort of 200 billion years from now. So there's a very long time in the future. And also, there are certain theoretical reasons to think that it's not very likely. Basically, it involves a kind of energy field we think probably can't exist. But, you know, it's intriguing because it isn't ruled out by the data and because it is such a very, very dramatic consequence.
The fifth and last one, the bounce.
So I wrote this chapter in the book as a way of bringing together a few very sort of similar ideas for the end of the universe that are in the same category, and this is called bouncing cosmologies. So this is something where the universe would undergo some kind of cycle. So it would have a beginning, and then it would end, and then it would have a new beginning after that. So for example, maybe the universe starts with a Big Bang and then compresses and collapses, and then there's a new Big Bang after that. Or maybe there's a heat death and then a new universe arises after the heat death that destroys this universe. And so there are a few really intriguing possibilities for that have been sort of theorized about in the last decade or two. And those are interesting ideas because it gives a possibility for something to come after our universe ends. And, you know, I should mention, in all these cases, our universe does end. You know, we don't get to keep going. But some people find it kind of comforting to think that something could come after us. And the other thing that's interesting about some of these ideas is that in some cases, something could survive the transition. So there could be some kind of trace of the previous universe that you could see in, you know, built into the current universe, which is interesting because that leaves open the possibility of, you know, kind of sending a message across or something like that. Or even if not a message, just some kind of trace of our existence, you know, living on into the future. And that's, you know, maybe that would make us feel a little bit better. I don't know. but that's one of those things where there's a lot of, a lot of new research on that, and it's a lot. It's very kind of preliminary, but there are some cool ideas for possibilities for a future universe after ours.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Unfortunately, we have limits to our knowledge and thinking. So how is it possible to talk about the end of the universe in a scientific way? Can you explain for our listeners a little bit how do you go about that?
Yeah, so, you know, we're not going to be able to test these hypotheses, right? Because sort of by definition, if we experienced how the universe would end, we would not be able to publish our data. And, you know, it would be that information would be lost. So it's a different kind of scientific topic in the sense that we really have to use extrapolation and we have to go based on what we know and then sort of see what kinds of ideas are consistent with that. So one of the ways that we learn about the end of the universe is by studying the beginning, because if we understood exactly what happened in the beginning of the universe, then that would tell us something about the sort of overall structure of the cosmos, the rules that govern the evolution of the cosmos. And it could tell us about, you know, if there was a previous cycle that our universe came out of, then that would suggest that there will be another one afterward. Or, you know, if we knew from the early universe what what all of the components of the universe were, then that would tell us, you know, how that might evolve into the future if there's some dynamical process that could change the evolution in the future. We would know something about that if we understood the beginning. So one of the ways we study the end of the universe is by studying the beginning of the universe. And the other way we study the end of the universe is by looking at how the universe is evolving and changing now. So we can look at distant galaxies and see how quickly they're moving away from us. We measure the expansion rate of the cosmos and how that's been changing over time. And then just say, okay, if this is how it's been changing over time, that tells us something about how it will change in the future. And then we can use that to make inferences about what will happen in the future. So it's very much about looking at the patterns that we see, looking at what we know about the structure of the universe, about the basic rules governing the universe, and then making some very reasonable extrapolations into the future.
So can you talk a little bit about the role that new technology and access to better equipment has in this?
Yeah, so the new technologies just give us new ways of studying the structure of the universe and the evolution of the universe. So there are some really exciting new telescope projects happening soon that will be able to show us many more galaxies, many more very distant galaxies. And that just gives us a way to map out what the universe is doing. So there's a project called the Legacy Survey of Space and Time that will be carried out by the Vera Rubin Observatory. This is going to be a big deal where they're going to look at billions of galaxies and millions of supernovae. So both galaxies and supernovae, you know, exploding stars, can give us sort of signposts in the universe to show us how the universe is changing over time. And as we measure the positions and motions of those objects, it sort of helps us map out what the universe is doing on the largest scales. And as we see really distant ones, we can see what's happened in the past, because every time we look at a distant object, we're looking into the past because the light from that object has taken time to reach us. So we can learn something about how the universe was evolving in the past and just get a much better idea of how the structure of the cosmos is changing over time. So just by seeing more of the universe, we're going to learn a lot about it. Then there's also some really exciting new developments in terms of different ways of looking at the cosmos. So we have now the ability to measure gravitational waves. Now, gravitational waves are ripples in space itself from the motions of massive objects. So specifically, we have machines on Earth that can feel space vibrate when black holes collide in other galaxies. I mean, this is astonishing technology that we have, and that allows us to study how gravity works. It allows us to study, the shape of and structure of space. It's a whole new window on the universe itself. So that's an interesting new technology. And then for things like vacuum decay, you know, where particle physics is a really important part of the question, new particle colliders, we have the Large Hadron Collider at CERN that smashes protons together to see what comes out. That experiment showed us the Higgs boson, which is this important new particle that's part of our understanding of particle physics, in 2012. And there are plans to upgrade that experiment and make a new version of that that'll smash particles together even harder, and that'll tell us more about how particle physics works. And then that could also give us some insights into how the universe will evolve. So, you know, there are a lot of different things that we're doing now where we're just getting way more data about how the universe works, how particle physics works, and we can use that to learn more about which of these theories makes the most sense.
So is there a question that you are most looking forward to trying to get an answer to right now?
There are so many big questions. I think the biggest questions right now are around dark matter and dark energy. So I mentioned dark energy. Dark energy is something that makes the universe expand faster, and that's kind of all we know about it. dark matter is an even more intriguing, or, well, maybe not more intriguing, an equally intriguing question. Dark matter is a kind of invisible matter. So it's something that has gravity. It's some kind of stuff that is most of the matter in the universe. So most of the stuff out there that has gravity that can pull together is invisible. So like 80 or 85% of the matter in the universe is this invisible stuff. But we know it's out there because it changes the way that stars move around in galaxies, the way that galaxies move around in the universe. It seems to have been the stuff that brought matter together in the first place to form the very first structures in the cosmos. But we don't know what it is. So I'm really intrigued to find the answers to those questions. What is dark matter? What is dark energy? Partially because I think if we do find the answers to those questions, that will point us toward a more complete view of how physics works that might answer a whole lot of other questions about, you know, sort of the structure of the universe as a whole. So I'm very excited about that. And then also, you know, there are a bunch of questions about the very early universe. You know, what happened at the very, very beginning? What did the first few, you know, fractions of a microsecond look like? You know, there's an idea that the universe in the very beginning underwent this very rapid expansion process called cosmic inflation. We don't know for sure if that happened. And there are some new kinds of observations that we're trying to do that might answer that question. So those are the kinds of questions that I'm really excited to learn the answers to.
What are the biggest misconceptions about the universe? I don't know. Do you see a lot? And is there anything that we maybe as a public don't know, but we should know?
Yeah. I think the biggest misconceptions I run into are around the Big Bang and what that was and what that looked like. So I think a lot of people have the idea in their mind of the Big Bang as being an explosion of something from one point out into a larger space. And that's just not how it worked. Based on our understanding of the early universe, I mean, when we as cosmologists talk about the Big Bang, all we mean by that is that the universe was hotter and denser and in some sense smaller in the past. But really, the Big Bang happened everywhere. So the universe may have been very large already, but it was much more dense and much hotter at very early times. And then, you know, it's been expanding since then. So there's no center to the universe. There's no point from which everything came. Every point in the universe was part of the Big Bang, was, you know, its own sort of center in the beginning. And this is all very hard to visualize. But, you know, imagine a very, very large space. And all of it was very hot and dense, and it was more compressed in the past, but it wasn't, you know, inside another space necessarily. You know, it was just everything was closer together, and now it's farther apart. Everything was hotter, and now it's cooler. And that's all we really can say about it. But it's not expanding from one point. Everything is moving away from everything else because all of space is getting bigger. And every part of space was in the Big Bang at the beginning. Was hot and dense in that way, and has been moving away from everything else since then. So, you know, again, it is very hard to visualize. This is not an easy thing to talk about without mathematics. But the idea that everything came from one point and there's a center, that just doesn't fit the data.
Does it ever worry you or frustrate you that you may never get the definitive answers to all of the questions you are looking into?
A little bit, yeah. Like I would really like to know.
Yeah.
I do think though that I get a nice consolation prize in that there are a lot of other things that we're learning along the way, and we are learning so many new fascinating things about the universe all the time that I really can't complain that every single one of my questions might not be answered. There are always new surprises. There are always you know, new discoveries that are incredible, where we get new insights into how the universe works. And I, you know, I'm grateful for that.
If someone wants to try to find a clip or a TV series or a movie that actually depicts the universe or the end of everything as we are talking about in a kind of accurate way, according to science. Do you have any recommendation?
That's tough. I don't think I've ever seen anything that does the end of the universe in a fully rigorous scientific way. Even science fiction doesn't usually do the end of the universe in this way. I have read some science fiction books that depict a big crunch, but I'm not sure I've read any that depict a heat death, just because it's not a dramatically interesting thing to read about. It's just the universe fades away. So yeah, I'm not sure I can point to anything specifically, I'm afraid.
But have you watched something that made you very like irritated because it was so bad, so far away from the science?
I enjoy science fiction. I don't require my science fiction to be scientifically accurate in order to enjoy it. So I'm going to decline to rag on any particular science fiction depiction. I think that, you know, people make different choices about artistic license, and that's okay.
Have you ever considered writing your own science fiction, maybe?
I have a few ideas floating around, and it would be really, really fun. I think that for the moment, I should probably write my funding proposals and my research papers instead of science fiction novels. But one of these days, I will break down and actually do it.
Great. We're looking forward to it. Katie Mack, thank you so much for being with us on our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Tack för att du lyssnade på veckans avsnitt. Har du synpunkter får du gärna mejla till redaktionen@nyteknik.se. Gör som tusentals andra lyssnare och klicka gärna på prenumerera. Då missar du inget avsnitt. Vi hörs nästa vecka. Hej då!
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.